on a bright cloud of music shall we fly? Shall we dance? Shall we then say goodnight and mean goodbye?
Oh, perchance, when the last little star has left the sky,
shall we still be together with our arms about each other? And shall you be my new
romance?
On the clear
understanding that this kind of thing can happen, shall we dance?
Shall we dance?
Shall we dance?
And there you have it. That was The King and I. And our time's about up here on Big Band Broadway and Beyond. You have a great week. Have a great 4th of July weekend. God bless. And we'll see you next week at 10 a.m. Friday. Now we'll play a little Harry Connick Jr. to fade out here.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for the new WHFR Journal, live from Henry Ford Community College, the show that gives you all the local news and views of Dearborn and the surrounding area. So exciting. 5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3 seconds, and here we are. My name is Jay Koronick. Thanks for being with us today on the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Views. I'm joined in the studio, as usual, as quite often anyway, Amy Powers, our WHFR News Director, and Dennis Reimars, our Promotions Director and News Director Emeritus. That's right. Guess he was the one before Amy. He set the pattern, and Amy now knows what not to do. There you go. So we'll put their microphones on so they can make bad jokes about that. Go.
Well, good afternoon. It's nice to be here, Jay.
Hello, Dennis. He assumes it'll be a bad joke. That's what cracks me up.
What's coming up, Amy? On today's show.
Well,
big, exciting show.
Yes, we have Republican candidate for governor, Rick Snyder, who's hoping to win the primary vote August 3rd. He'll be on the show about 1:15, 1:10, 1:15.
Right. We're going to wait for his telephone call in. We're going to do other Dearborn news before that. And boy, do we have questions for him. Of course, folks, you know, here we do things a little bit differently on our news show. We try to cover issues that the other stations don't, certainly by being as local as possible. But in regard to the Republican and Democratic primaries coming up in August. And again, it's only the Democratic and Republican parties that are doing primaries and are getting all that publicity. There's many other political parties in Michigan that will be on the ballot in November, and we'll be talking to some of those candidates after August 3rd. We were very fortunate to have a live in-studio interview on June the 11th with Virge Bonero, who's one of the two candidates for governor. We have spoken on the show. Two Democratic candidates for governor. And we have spoken with Andy Dillon, who is the other candidate. I think it was last December. But Virge is the lesser known, at least in this area anyway. And so that's why we wanted to give him a chance. And today, Rick Snyder, who is not polling. And I don't know if polls mean much for the primary at this point, but a couple weeks ago, Detroit News found that Pete Hoekstra actually had more name recognition and more support, although just by a few percentage points. Mr. Hoekstra is a representative currently to Washington, D.C., from, I think, one of the northern Detroit areas, Oakland County districts. Yes. Well, anyway, so he's been in office a while in Washington, D.C., and he wears really nice suits. But, you know, I don't know if that means anything. And there's three other Republican candidates that Republicans can choose to perhaps vote for on August 3rd. Got to tell you right now, it's even in the paper, which is good. Only one paper mentioned it, though. You have until Tuesday, next Tuesday, July 6th. Everything is closed on Monday, I guess, for the 4th of July weekend. Many places are closed today, but I think the city hall might be open today. Not sure about that. But if you're not registered to vote, then you don't have a chance to vote in the primary. But you have until, and if you know any folks in your family, either young people or older people that are not registered to vote and have all the ID, they can go to their local city hall and go to the clerk's office and just say, I want to register to vote. And you'll be registered then pretty much for life in that city at that location anyway. And so Tuesday, July 6th, is coming Tuesday, is the last chance to register to vote. I know there's a few people, even people, maybe some people listening to the show would say, don't want to vote, don't know enough about the candidates, or I don't want to take the effort, or they're all corrupt or something. And those are all bad attitudes, we think, folks. Civic duty. If you're a citizen of the United States, you should participate in choosing your own leaders and therefore the directions that this country is going to move in. Very important responsibility. If you don't know who the candidates are, well, I guess maybe you're not listening to this show, or you're not reading the papers much, or you're not trying, and shame on you. And yes, we should chide gently our other friends and relatives, people we know, workers, co-workers that are not registered. Yeah, in America, you're right, I guess, not to vote if you don't want to. I mean, it's not a police state or something like that. It really isn't, folks. It's not socialism, even much less communism. So, and there are plenty of choices on the ballot, too. In the primary on August 3rd, it's Democrats, not just governor, but other races, too, such as in Dearborn. 15th District rep from Dearborn has four Democrats that are vying for that seat. Only one Republican, so don't have to worry about that. But there is a challenge, certainly, in Republicans for governor. So Rick Snyder, former Dearborn resident and former CEO of Gateway Computers back in the 90s, helped to get that rolling, and being a big competitor at the time for Dell Computers, who is on rocky roads today. And I guess I see Gateway on Home Shopping Network, but they've closed most of their local vendor retail stores, I think.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, but that wasn't his fault. No, he got out, I think, in 97. So.
And I think, Dennis, what were you saying earlier after really building up the company?
He did. When he left, there were 10,000 employees globally. Did a really good job in that. Left in 97, like Jay said, and to actually start businesses from the ground up.
He also did something radical, although didn't come to fruition. He actually bought the rights to the Commodore Amiga computer system, which was a very advanced, a lot of people know about a Commodore 64, if you go back when far in time, and that was great for home computing, although very slow compared to anything today. And the Amiga was way ahead of its time. I think it was called the Amiga 3000. And one of the last things he did was, or maybe his successor, they bought the complete rights, all the copyright, all the plans, and like they were going to incorporate that. Of course, it didn't run Windows. It didn't, you know, it was a radical design and high tech for video and graphics and all kinds of stuff like that. And for whatever reasons, the company, whether or not Mr. Snyder was in charge at that time, they failed to do anything with it at all after they bought it. Didn't have the wherewithal, I guess, to switch routes or try something brand new. That always waiting for Apple to go that route, I guess. Mm-hmm. In any event, here we are today, and I just wanted to mention about the registration deadline next Tuesday. Remember, even if you don't want to vote, don't think there's anybody worthy of your vote, if you discover someone by accident at the last minute, even on August 3rd or November 2nd, if you're not registered, you can't vote. Here's a call coming in right now. We'll see if that's our...
Hi, Mr. Snyder.
Yes, it is Rick Snyder on the phone. Amy is talking to him. We're going to put him on the air.
In a moment, I'll introduce just a minute. You to the host and the editor. Are you ready to go on?
10 seconds.
Okay, in 10 seconds we'll have you on.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up right now is Rick Snyder on the phone with us. Mr. Snyder, my name is Jay Koronik. I'm sort of host for the show, but Amy Powers and Dennis Reimars are also here with us. How are you doing today?
Oh, great. This is just the start of a wonderful weekend in terms of weather, I hope, for everyone.
Yeah, where are you located right now? Sorry you couldn't be in the studio live, but you've got a really solid phone connection, so you sound great on our side.
Well, great. I'm in Ann Arbor right now. And, yeah, I wish I could have been with you. I was in Dearborn this morning, but tied up in meetings.
Ah, it's got to be very busy. I'm going to turn the initial questions over. By the way, just double checking too, since you are very busy, how much time do you have with us today? We go till 2 o'clock, and we certainly have enough questions for a half an hour if you'd be so kind to be able to make that possible. But if you can't, tell me right now, and we'll cut it off when we need to.
Well, probably about 10 minutes still, if that's okay. I apologize. I've got another commitment I've got to get to. So
okay,
I'd have about 20 minutes if that works with you.
20 minutes. Okay. We'll cut it off at 1:30. Is that good?
That would be great. Thank
you. Okay. Well, thank you for the time. You may not be familiar. Let me just give you the background. The WHFR is a non-commercial station licensed to Henry Ford Community College right here in Dearborn. And we're an all-volunteer student and alumni staff of Henry Ford Community College. I'm one of the few three part-time management people appointed by the college to supervise. But Amy and all of our other officers are volunteers that have gone through our training programs, and we have a lot of really great experienced people here on the staff. We have a wide variety of music format, and we're doing news, especially news, political news this year about challengers to office, and in this case, all the Republicans are challengers, in fact, in the August primary, yourself and four others. But we wanted to give you a chance to tell your side of the story. So over to Amy for the first questions.
Well, just to open up, tell us a little bit about your background and your Dearborn connection.
Well, I think that's fabulous because I really appreciate talking with you because I'm married a Dearbornite. So I've had the pleasure of owning my first house in Dearborn when we started our career. I married Sue Kerr, and both her brothers still live in the Dearborn area, and we've had two homes in Dearborn, our first home, and then we lived there one other time, both on South Highland Street, so it's just a wonderful area.
I lived on North Highland at one time.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Yeah. They're some of the best neighborhoods ever to go out for a walk at night, and we used to have a dog that was a tradition every night, and the funniest one is I had a job at one point where I used to have to work sometimes after midnight even, and Sandy, our dog, would still be waiting for me to go for a walk even when I'd come home that late. And
I have to segue with this first question, and excuse me, Amy, but you mentioned how great Dearborn is, and I live on the east side of Dearborn, and it's wonderful on that side, too, sort of split up in the middle, you know, by Ford Motor Company. But last week, I attended, as a reporter, the U.S. Social Forum here in Detroit, as well as some of the meetings of the U.S. Green Party, the National Convention in Detroit, too. Where are we? I mean, right next door, Detroit is a disaster zone. I mean, it looks like some of the pictures I see from Iraq of bombed-out cities, even though nobody's bombed Detroit recently. But What do we do about Detroit? And one of Amy's questions for the other candidates that came here was, how do we support Detroit? If you were governor, what can we do for Detroit? Do we do a bailout? Do we emergency relocation? Do you have any specific plans? Or what do you think? I mean, it's such... I actually did a lot of walking from like Wayne State University to downtown Detroit and back up on Woodward and Cass. You may be familiar with those streets. And it's just... a disaster zone. There's some small businesses trying, but it is so, well, so different than Dearborn. I mean, obviously we can't let that happen, but how do you feel about that problem? Is anything we can do? What would you do as governor, if anything, to try to help?
Well, we have to do something. I mean, in terms of the vision I presented for Michigan and my plan and all I discuss, it includes our central cities and restoring them as part of the process. And I tell people on the campaign trail, the only way for Michigan to be a great state again is for Detroit to be on the path to being a great city again. It's got to happen. And then when you look at the situation in Detroit, what I would say is one, it's not the role of the state or the governor to run the city of Detroit. It's how to help the city be successful. And the best way to do that is to partner with the people there. And I think we've got an outstanding opportunity with Mayor Bing now. I think he's the right person. He's talking a very similar message to what I talk about reinvention, business practices, customer service. And when you look at Detroit, and other central cities, we've failed multiple times to succeed in the restoration. And when you look at the why did we fail in the past? It's never been a question of what to do. It's pretty clear on a lot of what to do's are. It's been a question of failure to fully implement the solutions and to do that appropriately. Because every time people have tried that in the past, they would run into institutional barriers or other barriers or problems, and the implementation would grind to a halt, and things wouldn't really get solved. So my view is let Mayor Bing do their work with the city council and good people there, but they need a governor, a legislature, and a state government to be a strong partner, because it will be hard breaking through these barriers, but we will do it. It's got to happen, and I'm committed to making it happen.
Well, you bring up Mayor Bing, and that's an excellent analogy. He has a business background, very successful business background. But isn't that kind of the exception, not only on a national level, but also locally, or at least in our state, we've had business people that have tried to turn politician. You've had a very successful background also. What makes you think you might be different than some of the other business people that have put their hat in the ring?
Well, we've had some great successes in Michigan's history. I use George Romney as a great illustration. He did an outstanding job, and he had a business background. In a lot of ways, the skill sets we need are what businesses possess for decades, though. And in many respects, if Lansing doesn't work right today, and in many ways people have picked up bad habits, career politicians are not the answer. Because it's interesting, when you look at government today, it's a bureaucracy. You know, all it does is lots of activities without accountability, measurements, and results, the same way as we would require in the private sector or we require at home. So I want to bring those skill sets, those experiences to Lansing to say, let's actually deliver real results that are meaningful, measurable, and tangible and positively impact real people instead of simply spending billions of dollars. And so that's something that translates very well, and it's got to happen. It's overdue for far too long.
Mr. Snyder, your website addresses that hundreds of thousands of local governments across the country will become insolvent in the years ahead, and Michigan needs true leadership to be proactive about this rather than reactive. Where would you, or would you, start making cuts in government to address this insolvency that you see coming?
Yeah, well, first, it's not just to cut arbitrarily. Again, that goes back to what I was talking about, showing real results. Today, we don't have a system where we prioritize what our citizens really want out of government. We need to get to those priorities in terms of saying, what are the things people really want and what's measurable? One great illustration I use that I describe as a current failure of our system is our educational system. If you go to Lansing right now, all they talk about is spending billions of dollars. It's this funding level or that funding level. And when was the last time you heard someone talk about, are our kids getting an education? That's gotten lost in this discussion. That's the point of having an educational system. So I want to back up a couple steps and say, what do we need to do to deliver a great education to our kids each and every year? And you work backwards from there. You reverse engineer to say, how do you have the best frontline teachers? How do you reward them the best? How do you help teachers that are struggling or correct their activities? How do you have the best academic, cultural, and athletic kind of activities going on? And then how do you minimize the overhead and then how do you fund it? And when you look at that, I believe there's a huge opportunity for cost savings, for better results, in a more efficient system that actually will be focused on our kids again.
Mr. Snyder, this is Jay Kornick again. One of the articles in the Dearborn Papers this week talks about a bill that the legislature, Michigan legislature, has got, they proposed anyway, it may or may not be voted, and that is allowing community colleges to award some certain specific bachelor's degrees in areas that have to be approved by the legislature. Well, one is nursing, and certainly the community colleges like Henry Ford, you know, we have a premier nursing school and top-rated students, and that's appropriate for at least the first two and a half year program to get started in nursing to come to community college. But three or four of the other ones, one is that the Senate approved nuclear technology, and another one is cement technology. I don't know where the legislature got these ideas, but doesn't it sound like a green future to me? I know you may not have researched this, first of all, what do you think of that idea, just specifically? We have to move quickly since we only have another 10 minutes with you, but what about certain specific BA degrees for a community college?
Well, I think we need to be cautious about doing that because, I mean, the community colleges are playing a fabulous role at what they're doing today. And we have excellent universities that are fulfilling the four-year mission. And the question is before we look to add things, let's actually step back to say, are the universities doing their part to fully deliver what needs to happen on the four-year path? And if there's an issue there, shouldn't we look at getting that on track first before we expand to the community colleges? Because the community colleges, in many cases, are swamped right now. They're doing a wonderful job, and I'm a huge advocate of community colleges. That's how I started my career at Kellogg Community College back in Battle Creek.
Yeah, that's a great place, too. I've been there, but yes.
Much has been discussed about, you know, the business taxes and, you know, that Michigan in general isn't... doesn't have the grounds to, you know, attract new business into the area and how much manufacturing business we've lost over the years. If manufacturing business isn't coming in, or where do you see the effort needs to be to attract businesses? And would that include anything, you know, regarding like a Michigan fair tax?
Yeah, in terms of the manufacturing, I don't walk away from manufacturing nor automotive. I think they're a critical long-term part of our society and our economy in Michigan. They're making their changes. They're hopefully going to come back strong. So we shouldn't be walking away from them. We do need to add more diversity. We need to broaden the base. But in some cases, that's actually adding to their skill sets of saying for the automotive suppliers, can they sell in aerospace? Can they sell in medical device, other fields? But the other thing that's going to make us come back about this diversification is to really encourage more entrepreneurship and innovation and startups. The comeback of Michigan is not going to be the attraction of a few big companies to our state. It's Michiganders starting and growing small businesses. And I'm proud to say I've been a big part of that. I helped develop an organization called Ann Arbor Spark and this geography, and it's done a great job of not picking winners and losers of industries, but creating an environment where people can take their ideas in whatever field and flourish. One of my favorite illustrations, I've got some friends that build a wonderful company that's truly innovative in bread. They innovated on a 10,000-year-old product. So how do we get innovation going pretty much across the board and let small business flourish?
This is Dennis Reimers. Is that part of the Michigan 3.0?
It is, absolutely.
Okay.
And with respect to taxes, the question was also asked, the fair tax thing. I think the fair tax is an idea that should be on a longer-term agenda to look at overall reforms. But the most immediate issue we need to do is how do we manage the tax burden to make sure we're not raising taxes on people today? And the killer tax in Michigan today is the Michigan business tax. It is fundamentally unfair. It's the worst tax in the United States. And I propose replacing it with a flat 6% corporate income tax, something that's simple, fair, and efficient, and would be a job creator as opposed to a job killer.
This is Jay Kornick again, Mr. Snyder. The Michigan fair tax proposal, as I understand it, we've had some representatives from that group here, that would pretty much end all of the Michigan business taxes, but I know it would take a constitutional change for that to happen. A legislature would have to get it on the ballot. People would have to approve that, because it's right now we can't easily do that. So I wanted to ask, as we've asked other candidates, if you have taken a position, or how you at least feel at this point about a major review and perhaps some changes in Michigan's constitution. On the November ballot, of course, as you know, is a proposal to have a constitutional convention, which would take 2 years to review and perhaps present some significant changes to the public in 2 years. Do you have any recommendations on that proposal? What do you think of that ballot issue?
Yeah, I do. In theory, it's a wonderful idea. It's democracy at its best. But I'm against the proposal to have a constitutional convention. And the reason I say that is a practical one, that it opens up every issue in our state, some of which are very divisive issues on numerous topics not related to our economy. And basically what I think we'd find is it wouldn't be Michiganders leading the discussion. It would be special interest groups from all over the country putting tens of millions to literally hundreds of millions of dollars on the airwaves and other places, creating all kinds of issues on other issues other than our jobs or our young people here and our government. And it would take away from, I'm showing up with a vision, plan, and an attitude of action to say, as Michiganders, let's get our act together. So you'd have the circus going on at the same time. So I don't think it would be constructive.
Yeah, Virge Bonero said he didn't like the cost either. Hundreds of millions of dollars, $240 million or something. So kind of agreement there from all the current candidates, it looks like, on that. I mean, there may be an exception that I can't think of. So your business proposal, your flat 6% business tax, is something that could be done just by legislative resolution?
Absolutely. And that's the best starting point because, again, the MBT is a job killer. It's unfair, and it simply needs to be replaced. And let's get a job creator in its place.
There's Henry Ford Community College actually has a number of programs to help students get into green technology jobs. Where do you see Michigan incorporating green technology?
Well, green technology is, again, just part of this portfolio of new industries we should be looking at, and it's exciting. But I'm always careful from the government point of view. I think the private sector should be doing great work, and we need to create an environment to encourage all that to happen because it makes so common sense for so many perspectives, from an energy perspective, from an environmental perspective, and a national security perspective. But government's role isn't to pick winners and losers at the state level in particular. So I think the focus needs to be on creating the best environment, and then let all these great entrepreneurial people in green go for it. Let them build these industries. That's exciting. We actually have a lot of manufacturing base that could apply to that.
It is exciting, but there's a lot of challenges for small businesses to have credit extended to them. The banks have kind of tied up loans to small businesses, like on a very practical, smaller level that aren't the mega corporations. It's difficult to get money. How would that change with you in office?
Well, that is a concern because the credit markets are very difficult, and it's something that the governor can work on, but there's some limits because in many respects that's more a federal problem, and that's where we need to speak to the federal government about looking at their practices, because right now community banks and smaller banks are being squeezed pretty hard. They're being told they have to raise their capital requirements, which reduce their lending ability. At the same time, the rules the feds are putting on are very aggressive about writing assets down. And some assets are overvalued, but they're being pushed to put them at a very low value, which makes it even harder to lend. So there's a situation now where we need a better balance and let banks get into a more normal market mode of going back to what they can do very well, is be great community banks making great loans to people.
And on another note, where do you stand on stem cell research?
I supported stem cell research. It's a controversial issue to some degree, but the way I viewed it is as it was outlined in the constitutional amendment, the stem cells are being discarded. They need parental approval before being used, and hopefully they can help save people's lives. And I know people have differing views, and that's one I think reasonable people can differ over, but I think in this particular case, I supported stem cell research.
Going back to February, there were some ads going back and forth, or at least on air, that Mr. Cox had regarding, or that were regarding Mr. Cox and possible knowledge of the alleged Manoogian Mansion parties. Do you think he has any knowledge of that?
That's his issue. So I suggest you ask him, because the way I view it is we're running a clean, positive campaign. The focus is on how we can reinvent Michigan in a positive, constructive way, and other candidates, to the degree they have issues, they're the place to go ask.
Well, good for you. This is Jay Kornick, and we're going to give you about 30 seconds, 45 seconds to sum up here in the time that we have remaining. Rick Snyder, Republican candidate for in the August 3rd primary to be the Republican candidate for governor, has four other challengers. So what would you want to put forth to our listeners, our Republican listeners, as reasons why they would want to vote for you? Go ahead.
Sure, I appreciate that. I'm the business person running, not the career politician, who believes it's time for getting some real-world common-sense experience in Lansing. I'm a proven job creator. I've stood up and said I won't accept a dollar of PAC or special interest money. I'm the only candidate that have said that. And we need to get focused on it. This whole election is largely focused on the question of more and better jobs and keeping our young people here. And the last thing I would say is fixing Michigan is not good enough. We need to fundamentally reinvent our state with a clear, positive vision, a real plan, and make action happen, and have it so Michiganders win together and stop this win-lose attitude that we have in the state.
Last but not least, where can people catch you in the near future? It looks like July 6th you're going to be in Ann Arbor. You also have a website, too, if you'd like to mention that.
Yeah, our website's rick4michigan.com, and yeah, we have a town hall coming soon in Ann Arbor, and I believe, I don't have the date right in front of me, we're hoping to get back in Dearborn again.
Okay, very good. And of course, people can check your schedule, rick4michigan.com, and are some of these appearances on that site, I trust?
Yeah, they're right on the homepage, and right. To the degree you want more information, we have a Policy Central part with our vision plan and the white papers that will give you backup on everything.
I'm sure as a computer guy, you have a great website. We asked the same question to Verge Bonero, and we don't have listed where we're going to be next. That's a great idea. Let's do that.
Other thing is we have 22,000 fans on our Facebook fan page.
Oh, my gosh.
Hopefully people can go check that out. We've got far more than anyone else.
Okay. Oh, I have to ask, because I only got you. Were you involved in Gateway Computers when they bought the rights to Amiga 3000?
I was.
Uh-huh. Well, it was a great idea. Too bad it couldn't be continued. I mean, at the time, it was a cutting-edge technology, although not the standard, of course. Even Windows was big then, but great idea. I had an Amiga, by the way, so.
Yeah, no, that was fabulous technology. Carl Sasslenrath was a friend for quite a few years through all that.
I see. Okay. Well, I know you're in touch with a lot of things and very busy. Good luck with your campaign and getting your message out. Thank you very much for being on the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, the station making waves. Good luck to you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Take care.
Bye for now.
Bye.
And we're going to take a break. We're going to have, but we're just going to take a break in the studio. You have to keep listening, because we have Jim Hightower now giving it to both the Democrats and the Republicans on what they've been doing wrong in our country. Pretty pointed. I thought it was good to play these two spots back to back. We'll be back with more Dearborn News, local views, alternative ideas on what's happening right next door, right after these comments from Jim Hightower.
Should bank robbery be legal as long as the robbers wear name tags? Such an absurd concept is at the core of the proposal by Democrat congressional leaders to restrain the ability of corporations to steal America's elections. Corporate giants from Wall Street to Walmart were unleashed to pull off such robberies by the Supreme Court in an absurd January decree that corporations are, quote, persons with free speech rights and, therefore, are entitled to spend unlimited sums of money from their massive corporate treasuries to run their own campaigns to defeat or elect anyone they want. This is the nuclear bomb of politics, empowering corporations to drop megatons of money on candidates, literally letting this narrow special interest buy our government. Democrats promise quick action to stop this armed robbery of the people's democratic authority. But flexing milquetoast rather than muscle, the Democrats propose nothing but a disclosure bill. It meekly accepts the, quote, right of corporations to steal people's political power, as long as the barrage of corporate campaign ads come with name tags revealing who's doing the stealing. Yet, so-called leaders of the party are now even backing off on disclosure, watering down their own milquetoast. First came the NRA, shooting a hole in the bill to let them escape the disclosure requirement. Of course, other entities, from AARP to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, want the same exemption, so the bill is fast becoming a non-disclosure bill and a joke. This is Jim Hightower saying, backers say that these exemptions are, quote, the only way to win enough votes to pass the bill. What wimps. There is another way to pass the bill. It's to get out of Washington, where corporate money already rules, and go to the people, rally grassroots America to ram meaningful reform down the throats of these thieves.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
If scientists were to examine the DNA of oil corporations and of Republican Congress critters, I'll bet they'd learn that both are genetically connected. The two species have many similar political instincts and show a deep affinity for each other, so I'm guessing they're from the same genetic pool. How else can you explain the remarkable gusher of compassion that Republican lawmakers are presently directing toward big oil in general and BP in particular? For example, only hours after winning his party's nomination for a Kentucky Senate seat, GOP teabag darling Rand Paul was on national TV decrying Barack Obama as un-American for daring to demand that BP be held accountable for its destruction in the Gulf. Next came Minnesota's lioness of loopiness, Michelle Bachmann, implying that the hard-hit people of the Gulf are shiftless moochers who are using the oil disaster to grab corporate cash. Brimming with tears of compassion, the kooky congresswoman wailed that BP shouldn't have to be fleeced and made chumps to pay for perpetual unemployment and all the rest. And who can ever forget the astounding public apology to BP CEO by the oil-soaked Texas Republican Joe Barton? After Obama had gotten agreement from BP to set aside $20 billion to cover some of the damages it has caused, Barton called Obama's actions a presidential shakedown. He asserted that it made him, quote, ashamed to live in America, and he obsequiously begged forgiveness from the reckless CEO whose faulty well killed 11 American workers and is doing inestimable damage economically and ecologically. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, GOP congressional leaders are working to limit the legal liability of BP and its partners to a paltry $75 million. Such knee-jerk kowtowing has to be genetic, don't you think? Maybe oil is literally in their DNA.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go With the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
If these UFO, these extraterrestrials are so highly evolved, how come it is that they only address people named Bubba who are out hunting and fishing?
I'm Fife Symington. In 1997, during my second term as governor of Arizona, I saw something that defied logic and challenged my reality.
I saw one, but I don't know where it just disappeared.
And the saucer flew right over him and put down three little gear and landed out on the dry lake bed.
Governors, U.S. presidents, and former astronauts are among the millions who have witnessed UFOs. Many are now coming forward with their stories. Investigate the evidence the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when WHFR presents We Are Not Alone.
This is the new WHFR Journal. If we didn't mention, it is for the first show in July. It is the 2nd of July. Happy weekend, Independence Day weekend. I always like to say on Independence Day weekend, remember that revolution that we celebrate, you know, 1776 and all that, was done only by 3% of the population, that at least 60% of the American colonists did not want to secede from England. They didn't want to separate. They didn't want to fight. And it's always the active and informed people in society that can get things to change. And of course, I think pretty much all of us think for the better than being under the British system, although they had a lot of rights and freedoms and liberties that other countries in Europe at that point didn't have. And we incorporate a lot of them into our laws. But, and again, remember the reason for that separation was no taxation without representation. Imagine, they started shooting British soldiers over, you know, you can tax us, but we want to have a democratic representative representation. You can't just in your parliament in London tell us what our taxes are going to be. If we're British citizens, we'd have the right to make our voices known and have representatives elected to parliament. But over in the colonies, we don't have that. So the British could have gotten out of this whole thing so easily. They could have just made us another, like another state or province or whatever. And I mean, it. And given us an election to have, whatever they call them, somebody elected to their parliament from over here. I mean, you know, of course, there was, what was it? He was called Mad King George or something. Mm-hmm. So their monarch was not really open to new ideas at the time, and that really messed up the whole thing for any changes. But it's just interesting that people think, oh, we did it for freedom. We did we already had kind of like freedoms from England, but we just wanted representation. We wanted democracy, which is a wonderful thought. But also, if you want to be active, not in favor of the violence thing and shooting people, but there's many ways, not just voting, to talk to your representatives. And you just heard Rick Snyder, one of the Republican candidates for governor, and you choose. Republicans vote in the August primary, choose the best candidate out of the five that are there, and that's the person who will be on the ballot for you in November. So we're happy to have the time with Rick Snyder. Both Amy and Dennis have some comments about that interview. So now we're beginning a whole new feature on the new WHFR Journal, Instant Analysis. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, initially, you know, we were just discussing during the Jim Hightower piece, you know, what we felt he gave concrete answers on and or took a position on. And you know, one of the things that you were mentioning, Dennis, was, you know, right at the end, you said, yeah, I think he, what was the very last thing we were talking about?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, dear. Well, he did take a stand on the, whether or not to have a constitutional vote or amendment.
Right, not in favor of the proposal.
Not in favor of that.
He was very, very, very much against the Michigan business tax. He thought that
the
was
current
the fair current. Tax. Yes.
Thought yeah. It was very unfair. No, you're right. Now, what the heck were we talking about?
Green technology, I thought he was a little evasive on. I mean, it's...
Right. It didn't seem like he was in favor of too much government endorsement or, I mean, even when we brought that up with Mayor O'Reilly locally, he said, well, you know, every project we're looking at here to incorporate green or future technologies, just like the electrical outlets in their new parking structure around the City Hall area, so that when people do get electric cars, and Ford Focus will have electric versions by the somewhere in 2012, folks. Maybe the Nissan Leaf that I have a deposit on will be available even this year, although they said, we'll let you know when it's going to be available in the Detroit area, June 30th. That was yesterday, 2 days ago. And I did get that email from Nissan, and they said, give us more time. They don't know. But sometime in 2011, 2012, if you just need a car that has almost no operating costs whatsoever, and you can afford about $25,000 to $30,000, Ford, Nissan, I see the Smart for Two, which only fits two people, they're going to have electric car either by the end of this year or early next year for sale here too, although very limited numbers. So electric cars are a good option for people looking maybe for a second car just to go back and forth to work within, say, 20 to 30 miles each way. This will do it. And I'm a little upset, too, that he didn't seem... Now, maybe on his website he has more of an agenda about green, but looked there, Dennis, haven't you?
I don't understand what... I heard something different than the two of you, okay. Because what it sounded like to me was he said that he didn't go into detail, but of course we've just named a few things that we could do that are green. There's so very many, and I think all he said was we're going to set the table. We're going to create a climate. A little of that I think was based on the tax incentives that you had brought up before that. The government's going to set the table, but let the private sector go to town, and I think that's brilliant.
Well, it's such a huge undertaking, though. I mean, that you can't just let the private sector try and, you know, fund that. I think it does take some, you know, federal involvement,
which you talked about, sure.
Yeah, to, you know, make that happen.
Right.
It's got to be a partnership.
And it also has, it's an ongoing thing. It's not something right now where we can say, well, this is where the money will come from. I do believe that it's an ongoing thing, and that will evolve. At the same time, letting the private sector do it, which was the real message there, in my opinion, creates jobs. Creates opportunities, and let's face it, the private sector, when they're doing it for commercial reasons, that, you know, creates a nice monopoly. The lack of a monopoly.
We interviewed Dearborn Heights Mayor Dan Paletko this Tuesday on a new forum show, which is a forum series here, folks, is every week on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Dennis hosts Campus Connection on the second Tuesday of every month. Next Tuesday is going to be We Are Not Alone, that you just heard the promotional announcement for, which is our show about UFO and other unexplained phenomena, especially here in Michigan. Yes, there's plenty of those things. Sometimes there are a lot of them in politics, but I don't think Dave goes into unexplained phenomena in politics. But there's a lot of strange things out there. And now every 3 months, on the fifth Tuesday, which occurs only every 3 months, we have a show called The Heights. Up, up, and away. No, The Heights, News, and Views. And it's hosted by Netta Piggian, and we did a live show Tuesday, which is on the website, whfr.fm, the forum show for this Tuesday, 6:29, I believe. Dearborn Heights Mayor Dan Paletko for the whole hour. Boy, did we get any details. Now, I was just going to mention that because he said they're in the final stages. They've already granted the go-ahead for another film studio to build in Dearborn Heights, though.
Wonderful.
You know, the Unity Studios thing is not going so well in Allen Park. But the state of Michigan still has either the top or the second from top best tax incentives for film production operations, just studios and production houses and so on, here in Michigan. And that is a tremendous incentive to get these businesses here. Eventually, just like New Mexico, once they get settled and you get in, you know, all the everybody gets in their comfort zone and things get built, then the state could back off a little bit on that incentive and still keep the business because, oh, well, everything is there and they know how to treat us. And, you know, it's a great system. It's been in place for many years. They still don't have, I guess the deal is not a done deal in Dearborn Heights, but he feels it's there. He's given him the land and the city is all behind it. And I don't know what company that is or what studio size is going to be. My point would have been to Snyder, if we got a chance more time, would be, that's a government incentive. It's a big one, and it's costly. We asked Bernardo this question, too. Without it, Michigan wouldn't be in the film, video, media production business now at all.
At all.
At all, because other businesses are going belly up in Michigan, and advertising revenues are down. So if it's not for television or film dramatic production, or documentaries maybe, it's not going to happen in Michigan right now.
And
Paletko or Bernardo that suggested it should also be added to, someone did in a recent debate, commercial production mm-hmm. in Michigan. So that would be it. That would be the first in the country, I think, is they give a tax incentive for production of commercials. Whoa. Because Detroit was the number three production facility in commercials for TV back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Because of the motor companies?
Well, primarily there were, automobile commercials done here. But still, we had all the studios, and we had all the production people and directors and editors and all of that. And, of course, as soon as the auto companies went down and just the economic climate got sour here, it wasn't enough business to support that. But if the incentive came in, we do commercials for companies in California, they'd all flock here initially. So, but government has to be there for these incentives to get, you know, new directions started, like green industries and so on. I don't see another way to do it.
No.
Making the business taxes more fair, okay, which means small businesses should not maybe have to pay so much.
But there's a
startups.
As good as the film incentive tax, as good as it was for the state, the companies that are taking advantage of this are still bringing in people. Remember, that's only part of, they only need us, the residents of this area of Michigan, for some of the work. They're bringing a lot of people with them from California or wherever. With the green industries, they won't do that. See, we're actually training every aspect of green here in our state. They can hire the people. So, yeah, people will come from other states, and they'll bring their money with them because of the incentives. But I think they'll stay here because of the people that are.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
You know?
Yep.
You know, folks, we're going to bring our instant analysis segment to a close. I have to say, to remind you, the opinions expressed here on this station are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not necessarily faculty, staff, students, or administrators. And you should be very careful of listening to and or believing instant analysis, not just from us, but even some of these talking heads on Fox News or MSNBC. A lot of them, they might have a degree or something, but I don't know where they're coming from. I mean, somebody that's pretty well read, and I think I am, some of these people are whacked out, even though they sound very authoritative. And this is, of course, present company accepted in the studio here.
Okay.
Dennis and Amy are highly intelligent, or I wouldn't even let them on to do their perspectives on the Snyder interview. But certainly, your opinions matter most, and you've got to get it from reading, ultimately, enough. Even talking to Bernero for about 40 minutes is not enough to really understand where he's coming from, and Snyder for 20 minutes is not enough for you to make an intelligent vote there either, I think. But you can go to their websites, you can read editorial opinions in papers and other places online. I think you can skip the Facebook pages, folks. That's just opinions right and left. Oh, he's great. Oh, I don't like him. Oh, my God. So you need intelligent people to give you well-expressed, serious ideas in print, I think, where you can organize your thoughts and make them logical and so on, and then challenge yourself that way. But we're happy to be here for you, and we'll be featuring more challengers and alternative points of view in upcoming shows of the Journal. Here's a couple of Dearborn issues we're going to turn back to in the last, we have 10 minutes left. Coming up today on, by the way, Highway 61, Joanne Kruczynska is up north at her cabin, which is wonderful. She's finally getting a chance to go out of town and have a good time, but she misses being here. DJ Bob is going to come in, who's a great new DJ on our staff and has a regular show. I'm sorry, Bob, I can't remember when your regular show is, but he'll promote it, I'm sure, from 2 to 4. And I'm coming back at 4 o'clock. Oh, my gosh, 4 to 6. So Highway 61 lives, and we hope we can give you some really great blues, a lot of local blues too, this afternoon.
Were you at the market this morning?
Yes, I was.
How did that go?
I didn't see any politicians, so I was bummed. I mean, there's an election coming up, but I guess they're out partying on 4th of July weekend too.
Or making stops elsewhere in the city.
Yes.
We're on the phone at radio station.
But a lot of fun, a great activity. We interviewed today the HFCC Theater Department Theatricality Lab and motion capture people.
Oh, cool.
Because they're into this high-tech film production,
sure,
stuff. And we're the only school, I understand, in the country to have a motion capture certificate program.
Hmm.
It's kind of intense. Got to know computers pretty well. Not for everybody. Just starting out of high school, maybe, unless you have like 10 years of computer experience, yeah, already. But it's great. We're cutting edge here at Henry Ford in all the programs, and of course, telecommunications is the basis for a lot of these other programs in the art area. Apparently, motion capture, you need to know Maya.
Sure.
First.
I just took that class in the spring term.
Okay. And that's not the Mayan culture
it
who invented
not.
The big calendar.
It's actually the name of 3D software. And it teaches you how to model and then put things, and you can actually animate it.
So
cool.
Mayan software, you can still use it after 2012,
it's
right?
M-A-Y-A, not Mayan. It's...
Forget. No, but the Maya were the people. That's what they yeah.
They
and I named the software, but I'm just thinking there's going to be a 2012 disconnect since their
Look,
calendar ends.
You have a lot of misprinted okay. calendars in some warehouse somewhere.
Yeah. We're going to move on. Okay, thanks,
Please.
Dennis. New fire chief in Dearborn, Richard Miller, a lifelong Dearborn resident. So that brings to a close that discussion we had a couple weeks ago. One of the people who was being interviewed was currently number two, an acting fire chief in Dearborn. But the question came up in the hiring, does he have to live in Dearborn? And apparently our police chief currently is not living in Dearborn, and the city made an exception for him. And so initially the assumption was, even though that was a miscommunication, is that he was automatically X'd out of the running because he wouldn't commit to moving back to Dearborn. apparently lives in Wyandotte, someplace pretty close, but with his family for many, many years. So just kind of interesting to me that this person, highly qualified, was a battalion chief, left to go into private business for a couple of years, is coming back now, this Richard Miller, and he has distinguished credentials and Bachelor of Science degrees, actually went here at Henry Ford Community College in 1980 with an associate degree in fire science. The science of fire. Shouldn't it be the science of fire prevention and eradication? But anyway.
Eradication. Eradicate fire.
Eradicate fire. Down with fire. Unless you're cooking hot dogs, of there course. Yeah. But I just thought it was interesting. Way at the end of the article, I was looking for that. He is a lifelong resident of Dearborn. So that takes care of that whole issue, even though we understand that the city, to be fair, they re-interviewed that other candidate under the assumption that, you know, maybe... You know, he was bummed out, or the city was bummed out on that point alone. And the city was willing to perhaps work with him on that issue, as they've, as it was pointed out, they've worked with the police chief. But in this case, yeah, he's here, he's back. Richard Miller, call him if you have a fire. Okay, he'll come personally, I'm sure. No, but we have a great fire department, very good fire department, well organized. Nobody said anything else. Gino Polidori was fire chief here for years. And then after retiring, he got into politics. And, of course, he's now being term limited out as our 15th district rep. Everybody knew him and loved him as fire chief and also as a politician. So hope he's in his, I guess, office through maybe through December. Okay, Marge Powell and what Morris Goodman calls LaFaire Marge Powell. The city council decided that Marge Powell, nobody gave her the oath of office after she was reappointed in 2007, and so has not been technically legitimate. The city attorney, Deborah Walling, said, well, all you got to do, city council, is pass a motion to extend the period to give an oath one time just for Marge, because nobody doubts that she's not qualified. And Ted Tavelski, chairman, president of the city council, said, oh, it's not about Marge. No, 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 it's just about procedure. Well, it turns out, you know, behind the scenes here, is that Marge and the city civic commission did not approve of his concept of switching someone from one department to another. Okay, and he said, when he introduced this to the Civil Service Commission, oh, we're going to be, the whole city is going to be in debt in 2 years if this switch doesn't happen, which seemed an overstatement in the least. I mean, I'm sure the mayor didn't feel that, you know, switching one person from one department to another, where they're still going to be paid, don't they, would put the whole city in receivership. But the way the paper, and it may just be the paper and the way they phrased it and the word choice there, they were paraphrasing anyway, weren't directly quoting Mr. Tavelski, made it sound like do or die. And then the Civil Service Commission, which is supposed to be independent and have their own view on salaries and other things that affect people. In fact, Dearborn's very proud of having a Civil Service Commission, an independent one, because many cities don't even have that. So the independence is an important thing, and they didn't agree with this. And Marge was one of the people who didn't agree, so I think, oh, Tavelski wants to just drag her out on a string or something here, or get rid of her or something, so is that dirty politics or not? When he just said we've got to have the whole council, and the whole council sort of followed Tavelski's lead, oh, let's wait till August 5th. Well, now Marge Powell is on the string dangling until August 5th, and they got to have a special city council study session for this? The city lawyer already said, just pass the motion extending the oath, give her the oath, and be done with it. So I don't understand what's going on there. I'm not going to read all of Morris Goodman, who's a Democrat, and he's written the Democratic point of view here, but it's on page 6A of Wednesday, June 30th, Press and Guide, his editorial opinion called The Good Word. Get that, Goodman? It's the good,
okay.
The good man's
what's
word.
What's the title of the headline there?
LaFaire Marge Powell.
I think that's awesome.
City council needs to remedy this situation forthwith.
That's right.
There
great.
You go. So it's not a scandal, folks.
No.
rest assured.
Yeah, do not be alarmed.
You should be alarmed. There's a story here that I think is always unfair. I was a motorcyclist for many years, active motorcyclist. I still have my motorcycle endorsement on my license, and I'm thinking of getting another bike again. Many very old white men get motorcycles, by the way, and then die soon after, I'm sorry to say. Really? And the reason is you have to take a training course, folks. Two motorcyclists die in separate heights crashes, it says on page 9A of the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday. 2 points in the story here. Number one, it says nothing about whether or not these people had gone through the Motorcycle Safety Foundation training course. You can't pick this up. Even for a motor scooter, folks, you can't pick up these skills, how to turn, how to stop and brake properly with a two-wheel motorized vehicle, unless you take that class. I took it 20-plus years ago, and it's still being available, is being taught in local schools. I don't think at Henry Ford Community College this summer, but I highly recommend that. Don't consider getting a motorcycle or a motor scooter, or even if you have one, sign up and take the Motorcycle Safety Foundation. You go to motorcyclesafetyfoundation.org, find out more, and find the local schools that are certified to do that. You'll learn even how to, not only to avoid a crash, but if your motorcycle is going to crash into something, how to get off the bike. Don't stay on the bike. The article almost indicates that one person died because they were thrown off the bike. Actually, you don't want to stay with the bike. Now, you don't want to be thrown off at 60 miles an hour, but you don't want to stay with the bike if the bike is going to go into a wall or a car or something, right? And you have to know how to respond quickly. Secondly, one of the people died because their helmet came off. Mm. Did they have it not strapped down? You must wear a helmet. Now, I think it should be free choice. That's an issue in Michigan. There is a helmet safety requirement now. And there's no doubt that you have much improved chances of survival from a bicycle even, as well as a motorized cycle or a scooter, if you're wearing a cycle helmet. But you got to strap it down. Make sure it's a good strap. Tighten it. You know, if it's not tight, then they are likely to fall off after impact, and you're in a lot of trouble if your head gets hit. People are very fragile. So a couple of just, you know, be careful out there on the highways. A lot of people driving new this weekend. We're going to try to go off right now pretty much on time. Bob is ready to start the Highway 61 show. Dennis.
We got two things. One tonight, Dearborn Music Series, Friday Nights in the Park. Of course, that's over not far from where you were, right? That's right behind Bryant Library. Tonight we have Beat Club, which is the Beatles tribute band. Also tomorrow at 2 o'clock, Amy and myself are co-hosting Saturday Spontaneity. It is a tribute to Ernie Harwell.
And one of the area's most famous local musicians. No, just kidding. No,
well,
is it music or talk show or a combination?
Both. Yes.
There you
it's
go.
Combination.
There you go. Yeah. So some sporty music.
Sporty music. I don't even know.
And some sporty talk.
That
Saturday Spontaneity is every Saturday from
2 to 4.
2 to 4, and all kinds of different topics, and we're just having a lot of fun with that. A lot of our DJs are doubling up and doing special shows. So
but, you know, we might change our mind because you know we may be spontaneous and not.
Don't be so spontaneous you don't show up.
I think it's already promoted.
I'm already busted.
Ernie Harwell tribute, so we'll try to stick to our what we say.
Fine.
If only politicians would stick to what they say, then we'd be fine. All right, thanks for listening to the new WHFR Journal. This is Jay, along with Amy and Dennis, saying have a great weekend. Be careful out there. I usually say that, but especially careful with all the drivers and all the new roads you might try. And motorcyclists and scooter people, would you get properly trained and wear a good helmet tight? Thank you very much. This is WHFR Dearborn. We'll be back again next Friday with you. Take care. Bye-bye.
The longest highway that I know.